Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it, guys?
Hey.
Good morning, Russell.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Jola, yes. Is.
Jet setter.
So cool, man.
We got ourselves a Graham here today.
Hi.
Who is an editor
Yes. And
the producer of our show. We've got ourselves a Perrin.
Hello.
Who is also an editor and a maker of lots of things.
Yeah, got you.
And my name is Russell, and I am the owner of The Bioscope,
which
is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. This is our Clerks chat, where we aren't interrupted by any guests. It's just the three of us talking about what we've watched recently, and hopefully we can help you figure out what to watch.
Cool.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping into our video store.
Yes.
We were closed for a little bit. But we are open now.
Because someone wanted to go and enjoy the new chapter in their life in the Maldives.
Yeah.
But yeah, was it lekker?
It was amazing. I got married recently and we went on a honeymoon. As you said, we went to the Maldives. Mm. We got married in the bush.
Yes.
A couple of hours north of Joburg. And then we went to the Maldives. So safe to say for about a week and a half, I've been sweating.
Perpetually sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this set of jeans arrived in Africa on a boat.
Yeah.
So we were not built for this safari.
Yeah.
But no, I really loved it, and everything was very successful and amazing. And
excellent.
And of course, it was a great chance to do fuck all.
Good. Yeah. No, you earned it, man. Good job.
I have never slept as much.
That's awesome.
In my life.
Awesome. No, that's cool.
I actually
man.
Can't remember the last time I slept as much as I did, where you're like, let's have a nap. Mm. And now let's have another nap and let's sleep in.
No pressure. Oh, that's like
so. But we are very much back at work here.
Yes.
Back at the video store, and we've got lots to chat about.
So much.
I watched an incredible amount of movies on the plane.
Nice.
All of which are latest releases, so they're very topical.
Cool.
Some of which haven't come out in South Africa yet. In the wake of the wedding, I missed the chance to watch Conclave.
Oh, yes.
When there was a media screening, P-Dog went.
I got you.
Nice.
So every time, not every time, I don't want to build expectation on Perrin, but more often than not, when Perrin is on the show, he likes to do a list.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you, out of the three of us, were able to see Conclave.
Yes, loved it. Fantastic.
Conclave is a film that is currently in cinemas and going to be at the Bioscope from this weekend,
cool.
In the week that this episode is released. And it's quite largely about a vote. Because the whole film centers around the Pope dying, and we are now privy to this very interesting, quite thrilling moment where all the chief Okies in the Catholic Church have to come together to vote on a new pope.
Okay. Yeah.
And that moment, and I think where it takes place, is called the conclave.
Yeah, right.
And so I want to chat about that because I put my head up after all the wedding chaos and was like, oh my God, there's a gap in the Bioscope.
Yeah, okay.
What do I fill it with?
Yes.
And so Conclave is starting at the Bioscope this coming weekend.
Cool.
And it's fantastic.
So I haven't had a chance to watch it in all this chaos.
Nice.
So that's why I want to get into it with P-Dog.
Cool.
All right. Should we kick things off with a little, hey, did you guys see?
We should.
Yes.
All right. G-Force, do you want to start?
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Mission Impossible 8.
Yes.
Hell,
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited, dude.
Oh, my God.
Right? So, I can't believe it's like 2 years. It'll be 2 years
since
when this comes out. It was last year that the last one came out. It feels like it was this year.
Yeah.
But it was last year. But that was Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which they've subsequently dropped. They dropped the Part 1. I assume for marketing, like Part 2.
Yeah.
Part 1 stuff obviously doesn't do well for marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is now Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning.
Do you think this is the last Mission Impossible?
I think it will, at least with old Thomas Mapatha.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it just sucks that Dead Reckoning, even though it wasn't as good. I mean, look, the bar was set so high with Fallout.
Fallout was like,
it's one of the best action films ever made.
Absolutely.
I can't see the wood from the trees. I can't. Like, if you were like Fallout, I wouldn't be like, oh, that one.
That's
to
the
me. It's just like they're all just this like fucking stakes of the world.
Dude,
him running, fucking a stunt.
The he's always running. This like, trailer was just him running.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here for it, but I'm just saying I can't tell the difference.
Okay.
Dead Reckoning's the dueling helicopters one, and
sure.
the one
Fallout.
Where him and
Fallout's the one with the helicopters.
Fallout, yeah. And
Henry Cavill,
that fight scene in the bathroom,
the bathroom,
wow, with the famous loading of his arms.
Yeah, oh my god, that scene took them 2 weeks to shoot.
Yes, see.
Crazy, like
that is wild.
But yeah, Dead Reckoning, The Final Reckoning, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Holy Super cow, amped. My uncle was involved in production in South Africa.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they shot some of it in Namibia.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a handful of it that was like Heidelberg-y, like kind of middle of fucking nowhere South Africa.
Yeah, KZN. They shot a lot in KZN, I think.
And you can see a little bit of it in the trailer.
Yeah.
There's one or
the
two plane shots.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
When you're like, there it is. There's the motherland.
Yeah. And I remember him doing a promo for it, like updating people. He was shooting while on top of a plane. He's like, South Africa, ooh, you guys have been great. And he like jumps off. He's insane. He's a fucking lunatic.
And he also said something at a big award show afterwards. He's like, I've just come from South Africa.
Right.
And they've got this term, Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think it made a little impact on him.
Yeah, my uncle, so he was involved with, like, logistical side of things. So he, like, provided generators for the production there. He helped. There was a thing where they couldn't figure out how to make an airport hangar on like a budget kind of thing.
And he
suggested something and it like they just used like these tents or something and like it worked. And he said that like we were like, is Tom Cruise a lucky guy to work with? Because you've heard so many things. He's just like crazy guy. And he said he's like genuinely one of the nicest people he's ever worked with. Right. Like there were days where they were like had a day off. And Tom Cruise, like he said, the one thing that he always appreciates about people in business is when they remember everyone's names, including the little guys, so to speak.
Right.
And Tom would go up to the guys who were providing power to their, you know, their tents or whatever, and be like, hey, and he'd remember their names. He'd be like, have you ever been in a helicopter before? And they're like, no. He's like, come on a trip with us.
Yeah.
And like he'd just take them with. And like he said that he was like so kind to his staff, which he really appreciates.
Okay.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
That's lovely to hear.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so nice to hear, like, when celebrities aren't dicks, you know.
Yeah, well, it's also hard to judge them in the moments when they are. And
yeah,
it's unfortunate
exactly.
that, like, when a celebrity meets someone, they don't just meet one person. They meet that person's whole family.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
their extended network, because that story is going to be shared. And if you're just having a grumpy day,
exactly.
It is difficult.
I always take those stories with a pinch of salt. It's exactly, like, oh, I met so-and-so, you're such an asshole. Yeah, but he was also having a horrible day. So just
yeah.
He was trying to have dinner
too.
With his wife.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're people too. I know there was a story where John Cena was apparently grumpy to a fan, but like found out that this fan was bothering him while he was having dinner with his family.
Yeah.
And he's like, just leave me alone.
Exactly,
have a private moment here. Anyways. Hey, did you guys see there's a Game of Thrones movie in development?
I was going to mention the same thing.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers really striking while the iron's hot.
Yeah, so there's rumors flying around. They don't know what the details of the project are yet, but the biggest rumor I've seen is that it's going to be a Jon Snow movie. And I think because of how badly the show wrapped up, I think they're trying to repair the damage.
Exactly, yeah. Well, initially they announced a Jon Snow series.
Yeah, that got cancelled.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which was basically going to be like season 9 of Game
100%,
of Thrones, just
yeah.
without calling it Game of Thrones.
The King of the North.
Exactly, yeah. So I think it was going to be like a way of making another season without like the negative connotations of calling it Game of Thrones. I feel like they're just probably translating that into
100%.
A movie.
I wonder if they're going to involve George R. R. Martin, because I know he's not happy with how they fumbled the bag, but also he has no room to talk.
Exactly.
He's been spending 20 years trying to do these last two books and I don't think it's ever going to happen.
No, I also don't think we're ever going to see them.
Because he survived at the end, right? He killed
Yes.
He killed Daenerys.
Yeah.
Okay. Because he had to, because she'd lost her mind all of a sudden.
The thing is, like, the Mad Queen thing would have worked if they just gave us at least another season of developing that, because we could see the breadcrumbs forming early on from season 3, where she melts that whole fucking city.
I was going to say, what even would have helped was at the beginning of that episode, they often do like, hey, remember this other stuff that happened in the
100%.
Show? And just show all the fucking terrible things she's done. Because she's been doing horrible things since day one.
Yeah.
But it's never been like at the forefront.
It's just too, the 90 degree turn was too sudden. Yeah. It was just
felt too weird.
It didn't work. So that was a bummer, because every time I want to rewatch, I'm like, fuck, I have to watch that final season. And I mean, like, I'm sorry, but not making the White Walkers the very last battle
was
such
a weird choice.
Stupid, because the whole show has been culminating to that moment.
Yeah. And like then the opening scene of the first episode. Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, anyway. I was about to say, guys, this is a couple of years couple of years old to be chatting about. Hey, did you guys see the movie and the story and the real life people that make up Kneecap?
No. Yes, I've seen Kneecap. It's fucking great.
Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's coming to South Africa, and we are going to do some screenings of it in December.
It's a very Bioscope movie.
It is a Bioscope movie. First of all, I didn't know that in Ireland they speak another language.
Yeah, Irish.
Gaelic is Irish, which I didn't know. So obviously in Northern Ireland, in a city like Belfast. This film has been made about this hip hop group who sing in largely Irish.
Yeah. Nice. And it's considered a dying language.
It is a dying language, and especially for Northern Ireland, for those who are Irish but are occupied by the British who speak English, to speak Irish is almost this kind of...
It's like a crime.
It's a protest in a way, and it's and it's a sort of a defiance in the face of Britain. And so it was quite unheard of that these guys would be rapping and producing music in this Irish.
Right.
But this film is about their story.
And they play themselves.
But that's the most interesting part. They are themselves.
Right.
Cool.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome.
And Michael Fassbender plays one of their dads.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he's Irish. I think a lot of people know
he speaks Irish Gaelic. There's a clip on YouTube, because like you said, it's in defiance to the British rule, right? And even today, so the cool thing about Kneecap is they've normalized speaking Irish, like they've brought it back into Irish, like pop culture. That this is cool. You should be proud of it.
It's very, it's weirdly sort of eerily similar to what Fokof represents.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I'll never forget a friend of mine who was who's Afrikaans, say, you know, this was like the bad language. This was the language of apartheid.
Yeah,
It's nothing. And you know, and you look at all the Afrikaans music, and in someone's opinion, it's like none of this is cool.
Yeah.
But then, then a band made like speaking it cool.
Yeah,
again,
exactly. Yeah.
And proud, and you can be proud to speak this language
without being an asshole. Yeah.
So I'm just excited about that. I got to watch the majority of it on the plane.
Yeah, it's a
cool
movie.
So that is one of the movies I was able to watch on the plane on the way home. Most of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
It's very punk rock. It's very cool. It doesn't hold back. It's fun. It's exciting. And it's one of those, like, I don't really like that kind of music. That's sort of like electronic, trappy, hip-hop-y kind of music. But when you watch it in the movie, you're like, it's cool.
Yeah, it's fucking cool.
It's like you love it for the movie. And I think it's interesting that this biopic is them.
Yeah, 100%.
Interesting.
It almost becomes a documentary in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's quite interesting when those lines get blurred.
And it feels like they have control over their story, which is fantastic. So,
Okay. All right. Did you guys see, nobody's going to know who this is, Steve Asbell, who's an executive over at the studio formerly known as Fox, did a big interview with THR where they revealed several things are coming out. So it's official that there's a sequel to Alien Romulus in the works. Fede Alvarez is going to return. Kelly Spenny, David Johnson, they're all expected to return.
So it's a new Alien vibe. Got you.
Exactly, yes. Also, it also mentioned that next year there are two Predator movies coming out.
I've heard that as well.
This both is... of which directed by Dan Trachtenberg.
Fuck yes.
So Dan Trachtenberg is the guy who directed Prey.
Yeah, Prey was amazing.
Yes. Mm. So one of them, we don't know really like officially anything about either of them. We know one's called Predator Badlands.
Yes.
Live action, it's going to go to theaters. They just wrapped in New Zealand recently.
Oh, sick.
It's going to have, the only person we know who's in it is Elle or Dakota Fanning, one of those Fanning girls.
Yeah, I've read about that.
I think
that.
It's Elle Fanning. Yeah. I think it's Elle Fanning. But then the other one is rumored to be an animated film.
That's what I've heard as well. That's
amazing.
Going
to go to streaming. And apparently it's going to be set in old-timey Japan.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, because I remember after Prey, people were like, oh, they should do one here.
Yes.
They should do one there.
Yeah.
So that's cool, because Prey was amazing. And I'm going to put it out there. I thought Prey was better than the original Predator. Wow. I think it's...
I loved it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Prey is available on Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, yeah. Yeah.
It went straight to streaming.
Hulu movie, but yeah. Disney
and the
Plus,
whole thing
obviously.
Was, you know, Predator came out, Arnold Schwarzenegger, fucking action movie, whole thing about this kind of elite sort of crazy alien.
One ugly son of a bitch. Yeah.
And
made a bunch of sequels, most of which were garbage.
Yeah.
But then someone thought, okay, well, how do you make this in 2020, whatever? But
so
set in like
good.
A pre
pre-colonial America.
Colonial America, where this kind of Native American woman is encountering this kind of
Comanche.
Decepticon alien.
And it's really good.
And it's really good because it's this beautiful kind of standalone thriller of sorts.
Yes. Also, they said they're going to probably at some point get around to Alien versus Predator again. And Fede Alvarez actually said he wants to make an Alien versus Predator movie with Dan Trachtenberg.
That would be freaking
He wants the two
cool.
of them to work together to make one.
Both of them, we finally found directors who get it now.
Yes,
you know
exactly.
what I mean? Like, because Ridley Scott's lost his way with Alien. He must not, I know he wants to do another one and he must stay far away from that.
I just want the rest of David's story, man.
Yeah.
And he obviously doesn't want anybody else to do that.
David was the best thing of Scott's Alien movies.
That's 100%. A great character.
Great character. Yeah. Great, well performed as well.
Exactly.
If right now you want to hear more about Alien, you can scroll back a couple of episodes. Not too far away, but a little chunk away, is the Alien episode that Graham recorded with Cole.
With Cole,
Nerds. Nerds.
I stepped out of the room for that one because honestly, it's a bus that drove past me.
Yeah. No,
I was
these
like,
two boys
oh, there's
are big
the
fans.
Okay, and it's gone.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
I got a good one.
Ooh, P-Dog, hit us.
First.
I'm sure you've heard. I'm sure you've both heard about it. Hey, did you guys see? So Wicked, the movie, right? The musical.
Yes.
Their toy packaging accidentally linked to their website, but it's a link to a porno site called Wicked.com, and apparently this porno site had record high traffic to their site because these fucking parents and people were, let's check it out. And
so someone just put in the wrong link.
Yeah, I think someone just didn't double check. Either was intentional, which I don't think I think someone just didn't check.
Yes.
Like, there's probably like...
Wow.
Because the proper website is probably like wickedmovie.com or something like
exactly.
that. They usually do something like
that. Well, they've created a whole bunch of stuff. Even in South Africa, there is a microsite for Wicked.
Oh,
which
that
the
makes
distributors
sense.
Have shared.
Yeah.
And it's all about... Because, you know, this is the story involves... our main characters going to school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like a Hogwartsian kind of experience
where they're
in the world of Oz.
It's the origin story to the Wizard of Oz, characters.
Yeah. For those who don't know, this is the origin story to Wizard of Oz, but it's the two witches, the good and the bad witch. And it's sort of how they came to be good and bad.
Yeah. It's a adaptation of the Broadway musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I'm now forgetting my point. Oh, the microsite is like enrolling you into the university.
That's cool.
And there's a whole thing about the university.
Hey.
We're going to do screenings of it. And it's selling at the Bioscope, which is great. Like, you can see people are excited.
Yeah. Theater kids, get out here.
Exactly. So that's actually the point I wanted to make.
Dress
is that
up.
I think it's interesting that this musical comes out. We know it's a musical, yet... For the most part, the advertising of
they're
these
hiding
films
it.
Hide the fact that it's a musical because they don't want to put everyone off. Yeah. But they know that once you watch it, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
The Bioscope's taking a stance of like, we love a fucking musical.
Yes.
We can actually, I want to do a couple screenings here where we encourage a sing-along.
Right.
I don't think we can do it out the gate.
No, because nobody's going to know the songs.
I don't think so. No, because I don't think everyone's had the chance to go and watch the musical.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly been done
New York and
in other parts of the world. We've never had we've never had a production of Wicked come to South Africa. It is one of Universal's most profitable pieces of art.
Wow. Yeah, it's insane.
The musical.
Okay.
Yeah, the Broadway musical.
I don't know whether you've heard this recently. We discussed
it. We spoke about it.
Myself and Perrin spoke about it. It's been pretty much officially said that the most profitable piece of art, so gaming, movie, music, albums, in the history of the world, is the Lion King musical.
Yeah, well, because it's been running nonstop for a couple decades now.
And it continues to make money. It's art that continues to make money.
Yes.
Where, like, the movies, you know, do well in a couple of weeks, and that's what makes the majority of their income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this continues to make money on a large scale.
Yeah.
So Universal realized that Wicked, the play, which was their property, was their most profitable. So they were like, we should make a fucking movie about this, because it's only going to bolster the play.
Yeah.
In the long run.
A movie as a two-parter, by the way. This is the first of two
parts. Yeah, for 3 hours, aren't they?
Yeah. Something like that.
No, this part one is a good 3 hours.
I feel happy for Kira, because Kira's my lovely girlfriend. Wicked is literally, that and Hamilton are probably her two favorite musicals of all time.
Right.
And she went to New York specifically to watch Wicked. And she just said the other day, she's like, I feel like my whole life has led to this moment. So, like, she's very excited. And I really hope for her sake it doesn't suck.
Yes.
Like, I really hope it's early, like an amazing experience.
Early reports are that it's good.
Yeah, I've heard it's good as well. And Kira says, Ariana Grande is like, the casting is spot on.
Okay.
So,
good.
Yeah, I'm happy for her, man.
Cool. Okay. All right. So everyone saw a little bit of porn. when I first needed an email address, someone was like, just go to Hotmail.
Yes.
You know, and you can get this like free email address. I put in something else.
Just a single
M-A-L-E.
Just a singular Hotmail website.
Hotmail's in your area. No, I can't remember what I did. I think I was like Hotline or Hot something. And I was like, this isn't a free email service.
But I'm intrigued.
But interesting that it spiked
because it's crazy.
I'll never forget when I first started building websites and had websites for the Bioscope and the band and all these kinds of things. The one internet service provider said, please, you're not allowed to make any websites that are hosted by us that involve porn.
Okay.
And they were like, the fine print was like, it's not what you think. It's not that they don't want porn. They were like, the traffic is too high.
That's wild.
For these kinds of sites.
Yes.
And that our servers can't handle that amount
of
traffic.
Yeah, it would like explode. Yeah.
So it's amazing that you probably had like porn traffic plus little kid Happy Meal traffic.
Oh my God. Shame in this book. Those parents must have been traumatized, man. Who's next? Oh, yeah.
Hey, did you guys see? Which one am I going to go with? There's so many.
I know, dude. We got
This one's, it's sad, but I think it's also good news. The date for Mickey 17
has moved
from January to April.
Yeah,
now, I think this is actually good news.
Yeah.
Because January is usually where studios send movies to die.
Exactly.
Well, you've said that, but it's Oscar season.
Oscar movies aren't like box office movies. I'm talking about movies in terms of, we don't think this is going to make any money. We're just going to dump it out there.
Yeah, because also that's the coldest month in America.
Yes.
So like no one's going to go to the fucking cinemas.
Yeah. So what happened was the studio, I think it's Lionsgate.
Yeah, it's Lionsgate, I think.
Is doing that Michael Jackson movie.
Yes.
And they moved that from April to October.
They're sending that one to die.
Yeah, they moved it to October. So when Michael moved, Warner Brothers said, we're going to take that date, which is in April.
Okay, so I thought those two were going to go head to head because they were going to then be on the same date.
Yeah, but that's why they changed the dates. And I think it's really good news because it means Warner Brothers like has the faith in this movie to put it into the summer season.
I think it's also them probably... I wouldn't be surprised because, I mean, they're probably still editing the movie, let's be real. It's Bong Joon-ho is one of the guys who is very adamant on like, no, we need time. I need to do it this way. Like, I know with Snowpiercer, Harvey Weinstein tried to interfere in that edit.
Right.
And he was like, no, I want it done this, this, and this. And Bong Joon-ho gave him a fake edit for delivery, and then he had the real edit, like, posted later. And, like, apparently Harvey Weinstein was pissed off, but the theatrical version everyone saw was the version Bong Joon-ho wanted, not Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
So he was like, I'm sorry, this guy's trying to change things that are just not good changes or don't adhere to my vision, regardless of it being well accepted or not. I'm going to do it my way, and I love that. So
yeah, it's very exciting. And for those who need perhaps a little bit of context, Mickey 17 is going to be one of the bigger, I think, sci-fi movies of next year.
But it is so much fun.
It is the first movie Bong Joon-ho has done since Parasite. You know, since really, like, I think, breaking out further. I mean, he's always been a very revered, celebrated, award-winning Korean director, but Parasite, I think, just took him
to another level.
To another level of acceptance in the world.
Six Oscars, Palme d'Or.
And so it was very exciting that he chose this story as the next one. It's got Robert Pattinson. It's based off the book Mickey 7. And once again, I'm going to punt the fact that we have a banked episode with the author.
Yes.
So cool.
Edward Ashton, who wrote Mickey 7.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting. I just can't wait to release that episode. Yeah. And now we've got to wait even longer.
Yes.
Because it was meant to come out earlier this year as a movie, but it got like delayed because of the actor strikes. And as you said, him wanting to make his art perfect, which I think is amazing.
Yeah. Mm.
So yeah.
Let him cook. Mm-hmm. As the chillin say, let the man cook.
Yeah.
You know? It's me, hey? Hey, did you guys see... sorry, I'm just trying to find something. Oh, hey, did you guys see... This is a sad one, though. Tony Todd... Candyman, the original Candyman, he passed away.
Yes, I did see that.
Saw that, but I didn't know who he was.
Yeah,
so the original Candyman is just like a classic of like horror cinema of the 90s. It's one of those movies I always saw as a kid at the VHS I wanted to rent, but I was too scared because of the cover, like covered in bees and stuff like that. But Candyman is an absolute classic, and Tony Todd, he was also, I mean, he's more known for that, but like people recognize him from, I think, the fifth Final Destination.
He was in a few of the Final Destination movies,
Candyman is a classic horror movie. It is way smarter than people give it credit for. Yeah.
Cool. Did you ever watch the remake?
I didn't like the remake. I feel like the remake missed a lot of the point of the original film.
That was Jordan Peele, who you think would do
he
a
produced
smart...
it, yeah.
Oh, he produced
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. So the original Candyman, I mean, what made that film so interesting for the time as well. So the film is like, it's told through the perspective of a white character, but she's also dealing with a lot of injustice in the black community and stuff like that, and that's what sets up a lot of the story arcs and the, you know, the twists and stuff like that. And it's just such a bloody smart film that a lot of people just boil it down to being a slasher film, but it really is so much more than that.
It's like, an onion. It's an onion.
It's totally an onion, and Tony Todd is just phenomenal in it. Okay. Like, absolutely phenomenal.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see Simon Kinberg, who is a writer, producer at Fox? We'll keep going at Fox. It's not called Fox anymore.
What is it now? I was going to ask you
earlier. 20th Century Studios.
Okay. Yes,
so they got rid of the Fox, I think, to get rid of the association with Fox News.
Yeah.
But this is the guy who he produced, like, the Deadpool movies, a bunch of the X-Men movies, Logan, First Class. He also did The Martian.
Cool. He's a producer.
He's a producer and a writer.
Okay.
So he also wrote, like, X-Men Days of Future Past, Sherlock Holmes, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay.
He is going to be writing and producing a new Star Wars trilogy.
Okay, I saw that announcement.
Yes. So right now it's sort of rumored that it's going to be episodes 10, 11, and 12.
Okay.
But there are also some people saying that that's not true. But
I think start fresh.
I think they might be doing what's basically 10, 11, and 12, but without calling it that.
Okay.
Because like there's a bit of a bad taste in people's mouths because of episode 9.
I'm pretty sure Daisy Ridley said that there's talks of continuing her story.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there is like a Rey movie coming out.
Yes,
from a different director, which is sort of about her like trying to rebuild the Jedi Order, basically. But apparently, this is rumored to have also feature Rey, but in the like almost Obi-Wan style role, where she's like the main tool
later,
character.
Said later, yes. That's cool. Okay. Yeah.
But then they're saying that, but maybe not episode 10, 11, and 12, but because like the episodes now have a bit of a taint to their name because of episode 9. Yeah.
Do they?
Kind of. I guess. It depends on the audience.
But that's the thing, though. I find all Star Wars audiences, and there's new, it's a cycle.
Yeah.
New Star Wars. I hate you. You're the worst piece of shit ever made. 5 years later, hey guys, it's actually not that bad.
Yeah.
10 years later, it's the great. Why are you saying this is bad?
Yeah. Like the prequel revisionism that's going 100%. On is
so
insane.
Star Wars fans
are generational because those
if
are
you
the,
grew up with the prequels.
Yeah, 100%.
Those are the ones that you're nostalgic for.
Yeah, like I know Cole will always say Episode One's a terrible movie, but that's the one movie he's seen more than any other movie ever. Because that's what was his introduction, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think they're obviously like taking the approach of one of the things that gets criticized a lot about the sequels is that it was all different directors and different writers.
Yeah, it's a different vision.
So now it's the same dude is going to be writing and producing all three
movies. Someone's
going
to see the whole thing through.
Yes, it's like a consistent.
Isn't, I don't know if it's still happening. I know Taika Waititi was doing a new Star Wars film where it was completely not related to the Skywalker saga.
The thing about like modern Star Wars is they've announced so much stuff
and
with
so
no
much.
Indication of whether or not it's actually happening.
Yeah, because I know Taika's been in a really iffy form,
like
run of form.
Yeah, he was going to do one. There was Rian Johnson was going to do a whole nother trilogy.
He proposed one at one point.
Yeah.
So I'd like that.
Yeah, because I fucking loved The Last Jedi.
I really liked it as well. Like I feel like people are really unfair towards us. He was trying something different, you know, which is really cool.
The Game of Thrones dudes, the showrunners from Game of Thrones, were also like in line to do a Star Wars something.
It's
nothing
like,
ever came
it's
of
like
that.
James Bond. Like there'll be a bunch of like rumors on who it'll be.
Yes.
But speaking of revisionist history or sort of how history will paint certain pieces of art, you said you recently watched Megalopolis, which very famously marketed itself.
Yes.
It will change the face of cinema.
But it marketed itself with like, it might be pan now, but let's not forget.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, let's not forget that a lot of Coppola's work, you know, has only really been celebrated much later.
Okay. So
what are your initial thoughts and then whether or not you think that it could be the case?
Okay. All right. So the thing with Coppola, right? So you look at his run of film in the 70s. I would argue that Coppola was probably the greatest director of the 70s. He had both Godfather movies. Yeah. He had The Conversation, which won Palme d'Or. And then he had Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. But how many of those were based on things he wrote?
So Conversation was an original story he wrote.
Okay, cool.
Right. So, yeah. Anyways, the other
stuff. The Godfather was a very famous story by someone else.
Yes. Yeah, and obviously
Mario
Apocalypse Now was a Heart of Darkness written by someone else, right? So, okay, so he was the greatest filmmaker in the 70s. 80s, he started to dip a little. He had some, you know, some obscure gems, like One from the Heart, which is a musical.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then, obviously, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Blackula's a great blaxploitation film you should watch. Dracula in the 90s, panned at the time, but also has gone through a bit of a revisionism where people are like, this is actually fucking crazy and it's actually great, right? Watch it for Keanu Reeves's accent. Anyways, so Megalopolis, right? So I don't think it's going to go through that revisionism. So there are people, I mean, I know like David Ehrlich of IndieWire for some reason loved the film. I just can't fathom why. The film feels like film school students that they read Ayn Rand and they were like, hey, this is deep, man. Let's make a fucking movie, man, in second year.
Yeah.
And it's shot by a first year. Okay. And it feels, I mean, visually there's some interesting motifs and stuff like that, but it looks so like cheap and it just looks so if you don't know the history of Megalopolis, so Coppola's been working on this for like 50 years. He was doing pre-production in the 80s and stuff and just didn't work out because of the budget and stuff like that, and eventually no studios wanted to take it and he just funded the whole thing himself. He sold stakes in his wine company and the movie cost like $150 million to make or something. The movie also, like, the whole movie, the best way to describe it feels like a
a writer's retreat where all the actors are involved and they're all just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, and none of it sticks. And they're all like, hey, how cool would it be if this happens? Oh, what if I do a news broadcast right now? Oh, let's throw in a musical number over here. Yeah.
Like, well, apparently they were like improvising dialogue a lot. Like he would like encourage them to just make up
but
dialogue.
But the thing is, like with Coppola, like if you look at the big four from the 70s who are famously good friends. It's Coppola, Scorsese, Spielberg, and George Lucas. Yeah. They're like super tight. Brian De Palma sometimes would dip in there. But like you look at someone like Scorsese and Spielberg. Spielberg hasn't been as consistent as Scorsese in terms of quality, but those two have been the most consistent. Yeah. They, at their late age, they are still delivering incredible films that they work on hard and stuff like that. Coppola started dipping in the 90s, like severely.
Like Jack and that sort of thing. Yeah,
and like he just never got his form back. And with Megalopolis.
Yeah, he did Jack.
The Robin Williams.
Yeah, that was
really?
Coppola.
Yeah. So Jack's a better film than Megalopolis. And the thing with Megalopolis, it's just, it's so baffling. It's not a so bad that it's good movie. It's boring. If you want a nice, entertaining listen, go watch Mark Kermode's review of Megalopolis. He's like sweating by the end of it because he hates that movie so much. And the thing is, it's like recently, one of the extras that was in the Joker Folie à Deux movie was on Joe Rogan, and he talked about how the extras even knew that that movie was going to bomb. They were talking, and he said, "Oh, Joker Part 2 is the worst movie ever made." It's not a good movie, but saying it's the worst movie ever made is, I think Joker 2 might go through a bit of revisionism because they are already respected filmmakers and creators who are already
guys like
saying
Tarantino is saying how much they love it.
Yeah, Hideo Kojima thinks that people in 20 years are going to actually look back and be like, oh, wait. And that happens. There are some films that are...
It's an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
But I think something you've touched on, which I think is quite important, is the word like boring or dull.
It's boring.
Boring. And to me, that was part of the issue of Folie à Deux, which was like,
it's boring.
Like, where are we going? What are we doing here? Like, what's that extra layer? You know, you think of a movie like The Dark Knight, where you're like, all of a sudden, when the two ships things are happening, and it's like, who's going to blow up fucking who? You're like, fuck, this is just a this whole other layer. Yeah. Like, we've just, you know, it's the film version of like going up an octave.
Yeah,
where,
100%.
You know, to speak in wicked musical terms, we've just like brought it up, you know?
Yeah.
It is a whole nother layer that's just going to keep you going for another chapter.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is partly why, and I'm just going to put this out there now, why I struggled a little bit with Gladiator 2.
Okay.
And that's why I want you guys to see it. And I want us to talk about it because in Gladiator 1, you want to jump into that fucking screen and help him fuck up
100%.
Joaquin Phoenix. You fucking hated that guy so much.
Yeah, and this, you didn't feel that.
Yeah, it was like, wait, who? What?
Yeah.
And it's a bit boring.
But that's
a bit dull. And then I saw, this is what I find very interesting in 2024. We were relying a lot more on our social media, the reactions.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
The
reviews
and the tomato meter. And people are,
it's a problem.
People are sniffing these things out. But I think it's not so much of a problem because I think we're getting a good guidance.
Right.
Yeah. And I think in many cases, it's like, ooh, this is exciting. Or, hey, the reactions are, it's a bit dull.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like with the thing with like Joker 2, right? One thing I appreciate, the only thing I can appreciate about that film is that if it was done by a more capable director, someone who was just a little more well-versed or at least
less surface level.
Yeah, more capable.
Yeah.
Joker 2 could have been amazing. I mean, the idea of it being a musical and a courtroom drama was like an interesting idea. Like, that's fucking cool. It's actually not going to be derivative of just Taxi Driver and King of Comedy. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, but Todd Phillips was just not capable of marrying those two ideas. It just got boring. And every time it got interesting, we got a dull-ass fucking musical number. If you're going to do a Joker musical, make it batshit insane.
Well, the whole point is to ask the big question, which is, why did we make this?
Mm. Exactly.
Like, what was the thing that had to be told? Where did this have to go?
Yeah.
And it's the same, once again, with Gladiator 2, which is like, why did we do this?
What's the point?
Like, what was that, like, fuck, we really got to tell that story.
Yeah.
And you guys have touched on this earlier where you're like, you know, the Jon Snow story, yeah, or, you know, more about Rey and the Skywalker story. It's like if we need to tell those stories, then we must.
Yes.
But, like, what was the point?
So that's the one thing I just want to touch on quick, is that, like, Tarantino recently just, like, did a whole thing where he was like, oh, I don't want to watch remakes or sequels because, you know, I've seen that story already. And then he calls out Dune.
Yes.
Even though that's a new adaptation. It's not a remake of David Lynch's Dune.
No, not at all.
And he's like, oh, I don't want to see sandworms and stuff. I'm sorry, coming from the guy who is a fucking glorified cover band.
I was going to say, everything he does is referential. That's his whole thing.
And he's good at making it his, like, flavor. But, I mean, Kill Bill is essentially a remake of Lady Snowblood.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and, like, he copies and borrows from and so much.
The Hateful Eight is a Western version of The Thing.
Exactly. Exactly. You know?
it's exactly the same.
Let's not get into that. It's a bunch of egotistical guys talking shit. And also having some of their stuff being taken out of context.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So it's quite hard to understand exactly what they say.
Anyways.
Let's do maybe one more. I want to then get into the movies.
Yes.
The movies of the moment.
Mobs. Yeah.
I have several stories, so I need to pick one. Okay, so hey, did you guys know a few years ago Warner Brothers lost the rights to the Lego movie, to like the Lego franchise?
Oh, crazy.
I guess they had it for like a limited time, and then when it came back to it, I assume they were outbid. So okay. Universal has it now. So that for one thing, they're doing that piece by piece.
Yes,
thing. Yeah, the documentary.
But they've also announced they're making 3 live action Lego movies.
What's the point of that?
I don't know. Like, did they not learn anything from the freaking Minecraft trailer?
But do you know? Yeah, exactly. The one thing I hate about the term live action, like the Lion King remake, was not live action.
No,
it was
just
a fancier animation.
Yes. This will be like real actors on a green screen in like a Lego thing.
Wow.
And they're doing it. Like, they've already announced the directors for these 3 movies.
Who's directing them?
So one of them is Jake Kasdan. Who is Lawrence Kasdan's son.
Okay.
He just did, I don't think any of us went to the screening for Red One.
Oof.
He just did that. He did those Jumanji movies. So he's like...
Yeah, the Jumanji films did quite well.
They did very well. And they're doing another one. There's another one out in 2026.
Red One got a little bit of a bad stamp on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I don't think he's bad, but he's competent.
Yeah, sure.
But, like, not interesting. One of them is going to be Patty Jenkins, who did Monster, and she did Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
I think her output is more good than bad. I know no one saw or liked Wonder Woman 84.
Yeah,
so that's like the one stamp. I don't know. I never saw it.
She's gonna do a Lego version of Monster.
Yeah, and then the other one is Joe Cornish, who's the guy who did Attack the Block.
I love Attack the Block, which is awesome.
Yeah. He did a movie called The Kid Who Would Be King, which is like a contemporary Arthurian thing, and it is great. No one saw it.
Yeah, that was one of those.
Heard of it,
really
yeah.
good.
The kid who would be king is one of those famous, like, how did that not work?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it was amazing and it was good, and I think it was just timing. And
it's on Disney Plus. It's a really, really good movie. It's really just a sweet, fun kids movie.
Yeah.
Like Joe Cornish one is like the one that I'm like, okay, let's see what this guy can do. But I'm like, I feel like Patty Jenkins is the wrong person for this sort of thing. Yeah. And I don't care about
The only thing that could make sense is if it's like humans that find themselves in like Legoland.
That's exactly what I'm expecting, something like that.
Yeah,
and it's really
the Barbie route almost. Yeah.
Like the Lego movie and Lego Batman were fantastic.
Yeah.
They were so good. And they were self-aware as well.
Yeah,
like the sense of humor was.
And I mean, we do get live action bits in those movies.
Yes.
So,
All right. Well, let's see.
But who knows? Who knows?
So I don't know whether you were able to put together a list.
I did.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, Perrin, you have assembled a list.
Yes.
Of the best films relating to elections.
Okay.
Which I think is very cool because the world saw a good old fucking Trump voted in.
Ooh.
quite strongly voted in.
I'm shocked at it.
Not like the last time where he sort of got it through the electoral
college. I can't believe he's got the popular vote as
and
well.
And he got
fucking
the popular
insane.
Vote, which just says a lot about 2024 and...
Yeah, I hope you guys enjoy King Trump, Emperor Trump, for the next 1,000 years. He's going to turn into a worm like in God Emperor of Dune. You know, he's going to this fucking, oh my God.
I loved, reading the first Dune book, the book. And then I was like, do I need to read the rest? And then I saw a YouTube video and I was like, oh my God, what they the
fuck? Yeah, God Emperor is like the weirdest. Yeah. Like it's yeah. when it's like, oh.
Did you read that stuff?
No, I didn't get that far, but I know God Emperor is like fucking crazy.
I think just one thing to mention, because it's all relating to what we are going to consume. And one of this is going to be the sort of the commentary of Trump's presidency. I think the first presidency was fueled by like the late night hosts who, most of which are left leaning.
Yeah.
You know, making jokes about him because they were astonished that this was even happening. And it was like the sort of surreal
idiocracy
dream of like, oh my God, look, I can't believe we're here. Look how silly this guy is.
Yes.
I think the tone is going to be so interesting the second time around because it's not going to be like, you know, how did this one slip past us?
Yeah.
It's not going to be like, oh fuck, we're here.
Yeah.
And I think the tone isn't going to be as comical.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting to see what kind of media output happens.
Yeah, I think it's a lot gloomier than before.
Mm. And a little more sobering.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Where before it's like scary. You were in the chaos of the party, where now we're in the next day. It's, where it's like, oh my God, you're here.
And they're ready for it, which is scary.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay, so on that note, perhaps you can just mention like why did you love Conclave?
Okay, so Conclave... You obviously mentioned, you know, it's about like an election and stuff. And it's so fitting to this time because the whole movie. So Ralph Fiennes is a central character. He's running this election, essentially.
Okay.
But they can also vote for him, right? So there are several candidates that, you know, some of them don't want because of certain policies. Like they're very anti, you know, gays in the church or the gays should go to hell kind of vibe. And then the other candidate is more welcoming to everyone and, you know, accepting of other religions. But then there's another guy who's very, you know, xenophobic and not accepting of religions and stuff. And the whole movie just plays this interesting dynamic of how things get moving and how things have to change and how Ralph Fiennes' character has a battle with his own faith because of this, you know, where he's having to decide, okay, what's the lesser of these two evils? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or who should I vote for? Or who should I, you know, stake all my, you know, faith in and stuff like that?
Right.
And it's just such a fucking fascinating film about the dynamic of power in this setting. You know what I mean? And how things change so quickly and how things change when it gets ugly and stuff like that. And it's just impeccably shot. Ralph Fiennes is definitely going to get an Oscar nomination. I think it's going to be... down to him, between him and Coleman Nabingo in Sing Sing.
I want to talk about Sing Sing. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought it up. It was one of my plane movies.
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's going to be between those two to win Best Actor. And Daniel Craig, actually, for Queer. So it's a phenomenal film. It's done, directed by Edward Berger, I think that's his name. He did All Quiet on the Western Front, which I wasn't a fan of. Well made. But this film was just phenomenal. Very interesting ending that a lot of people, it's one of those endings where people are going to talk about. They're like, what the fuck was that? You know what I mean?
Okay.
In a good way, I think.
Lovely.
And I love films that have endings where it gets people talking immediately. That's why I like films like 2001, Taxi Driver, those endings, when you finish it, you're like, whoa, what the fuck was that? Like, what is happening here? You know what I mean? So Conclave is a great movie. It's a great bioscope movie, I think.
So that's why when you said that, I love hearing that.
It's and a I've great got a, thriller.
And I've got a few folks out there in the world who I often try and bounce off where I'm like, is this a bioscope movie? Because we'll never define exactly what a bioscope movie is.
Yes, but you know what it is when you see
it. It's a vibe,
I think it's a little bit like which artworks I license or buy from illustrators for Limited Edition, the clothing company. I don't necessarily know what it is. I just know what it's not.
It's a feeling. It's a feeling.
It's a feeling, and it's like, I know what it's not.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think it's just when it is smart and when there is intention and when there is this kind of like confidence, I'm in. So that's exciting. So perhaps we can relatively quickly, if you don't mind.
The list,
Let's do the list. I'm curious to see what your...
Okay, so unfortunately, like pretty much all these movies aren't available to stream in this country, which is insane. Right.
Okay,
but if you have access to Amazon, you want to order stuff, or you know VPN or whatever, these are available in certain areas.
If you want to put on your eye patch?
Yeah, exactly. All right, sail the seven seas
and hoist the flag.
Yeah,
go do it.
Okay, number one, it's in the name, Election by Alexander Payne.
Cool. This is the Reese Witherspoon.
Her Matthew best Broderick. Performance, in my opinion, as Tracy Flick. Mm. And
she's running for like student body president.
Yeah. So the movie follows three characters. Matthew Broderick's a teacher who hates Tracy Flick because she's a teacher's pet and she's just tries too hard. She's running for president, and there's like the beloved nice guy jock is running for president as well. And the movie is fantastic. It's so funny. It's dark. It's so good. It's just
Alexander Payne is a smart.
Yeah, he did Sideways. He did The Holdovers, and it's so good.
He's the person I keep getting confused.
It's phenomenal. So Election is that is Reese Witherspoon's best performance. I love her so much in that. Boys State. That's on Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
Yes.
That was my fifth favorite movie of 2020.
Okay.
Fucking incredible
documentary. Yeah. It's a documentary.
So the idea is that in America, each state, they have like almost like a Model UN thing.
Yes.
Where all the boys from selected high schools who apply, obviously, they've come together in a city and they form a government for like 5 days.
Is it only boys?
It's you get a girl state. That's another one. It's not as good as boys state. Girl State is another new documentary, you can watch them back to back.
But
actually,
for this, for this organization that you're speaking of, it is only boys. In
Yeah, so they have a girls' version and a boys' version, but this one that we follow, it's just boys forming government. So in these 5 days, they form parties, they form candidates. They eventually culminates into vote for governor, not for president, for governor. Okay. And I think the I can't remember the parties, but it's not Republican and Democrat. It's like Nationalist and Federalists or something. And
so it's all play-play.
It's all play-play. And it's just such an eye-opening viewing experience, because you see these kids who are going to – it's the birth of monsters that we're viewing, but it's also the birth of proper, genuine leaders who are going to be amazing, and we just need to get them in power. You know what I mean? And there's one part where they were pushing for anti-abortion, you know, trying to get the more conservative kids to vote for them. And the candidate was like, I don't believe in abortion, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say to get votes. Yeah. He's like, I believe in choice. And he's from a farm in the middle of, you know, nowhere. Jeez. And it's an incredible documentary. So good. It's funny. It's scary. It's just... it's so entertaining.
Okay. And that one you can watch.
That's on Apple TV Plus. Highly recommended. Girl State is another one.
Nice.
Same filmmakers, not as good. And Boys State, you can watch it back to back.
Yeah. Cool.
War Room, which is a great documentary as well. It's D.A. Pennebaker. He did documentaries on like Bob Dylan and David Bowie back in the 70s. He did a great little documentary called Company, which is a short hour-long documentary about like the process of recording the studio version of a Broadway play. And it's so good. Anyways.
Okay.
So this director, he did War Room. It's 1992. It follows Clinton's campaign team during the primaries in the 90s, just before he's about to become president.
Okay.
And it is incredible as well. Like real fly-on-the-wall documentary, no talking heads, just like...
just follows
witnessing the shit.
Yeah.
And it's just so intense, and it won an Oscar, and it's so, so good. Okay. So War Room, highly recommend it. It's on the Criterion Channel if you have it. Pro tip, if you go on the Criterion Channel without a VPN on a web browser, you can access it.
Oh. Yeah.
You can subscribe, and it won't turn you away, which is fantastic. President, another incredible documentary. This follows Nelson Chamisa's campaign to take on Emmerson Mnangagwa. I'm butchering that. In the Zimbabwe elections after Mugabe leaves office. And also sobering, scary, incredible.
That was in the mix with the bioscope, because I'm pretty sure we screened that.
That was a festival movie. Oh, yeah. President, phenomenal film. I think it's done by Danish filmmakers, but it's also another great film following a great man where you want to leap into the screen and fucking get him in office. You know what I mean? It's
and
just
I
so
think the
good.
Result is he didn't get in.
Yeah, he didn't get in. But he came very close, and he like caused the point is that he creates a movement that's important. Mm. You know what I mean? It's a fucking great movie. And then one more, No, N-O, in capital letters. It's Pablo Larraín. He did Spencer. Okay. And he did a new movie called Emma, which is also amazing. Chilean director. It stars Gael Garcia Bernal. You're familiar with him from Morros Perros, Y Tu Mamá También. I can't remember what other, like, mainstream movies.
After Y Tu Mamá También, him and
Diego Luna
went on to be sort of quite famous guys.
Yeah, so you'll recognize him when you see him. He was in a show called Mozart in the Jungle on Prime, I think. But anyways, so what it's about is in the, I think, 80s, Chile was under a lot of, like, international pressure because they obviously had the dictator Pinochet was in charge, and basically it was a referendum to see if people wanted him for 8 years more years of power or no. And Gael Garcia Bernal, it's based on a true story. His character is a small advertising executive who was hired to create the campaign to vote no.
Right.
Okay. And it follows them making this campaign to try win this referendum of him not getting 8 more years.
Right.
And it is phenomenal as well. Spanish language film. Mm. It's Chilean. It's shot. There's lots of cool visual styles where they'll drop to like VHS quality and they'll drop to like cinematic quality. And yeah, those are 5 great election-driven films that I highly recommend.
Okay,
thanks, P Dog. I love this shit. You really add such a great,
Thanks, man.
Yeah, a lovely element to the chat. Thanks. I'd love to just chat about Sing Sing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
so
great.
So I was on some long flights.
Yeah.
And I managed to watch Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, so good.
Which I want to talk more about at some point. Cool. But it's a somewhat of a last year film.
Yeah.
I watched the film Robot Dreams, which is an animated film.
Robot Dreams. So good.
Yes. So, so good.
Beautiful. Wordless. It's a wordless
animation. It's a wordless
film.
Yeah, I've been wanting
animation.
To watch it.
Which we can also get into at some point, perhaps even in this chat. But then I was able to watch Sing Sing.
Okay.
So what I love about this movie is its authenticity. Mm. Okay. So what it is about, the back of the box of Sing Sing is about the prison, the famous prison in America called Sing Sing, where there is a group within the prison that put on plays. And this is the story of them putting on one play in particular.
Okay.
And it follows the course of this one production. What I love about it is that your normal movie, your normal approach would have been the formation of this group.
Right.
You know, that's the typical...
Yeah, the origin story.
The origin story about, you know, here we are, let's try to put it together. Some are for it, some are against it. Some turn, you know, and see the light. What's lovely about this movie is that the movie starts with them coming out of their one play.
Mm. Okay.
And they're now going to start the next one. Right. So this group has been formed. And at the heart of the group is Coleman Domingo's character, who really is a force for like advocating for why this is great.
Right.
And what's so lovely about it is it's not about making the world's greatest play. It's about how art and the creation of art and playing and the beautiful essence of theater can just help your soul.
Yeah, okay. Rehabilitates.
And rehabilitate and just take you out of this. So this whole film is all centered around the mentality of those incarcerated. Mm. And just a commentary on that life and that system and what it means to be so stuck in this place. They bring in a new guy who kind of disrupts the group. Yeah. And this is such a great film about character arcs, because at the start of the season you've got Coleman Domingo who kind of knows what's going on. He can see the wood from the trees and is there to sort of help these guys and brings in a dude who just says, fuck this, why are we doing this? And disrupts everything.
Yeah, and he's hesitant on the process as well, because the film as well, there's a lot of moments where they're like, trust the process, like trust the process. And he's like kind of like iffy towards the process.
And to be honest, I've done theater, so I've done the performance and I did that at Varsity. Mm. And one thing I struggled with was being vulnerable to play.
Yeah. Yes.
Where it's all sudden, it's like everybody be a chicken, and you got to be okay to be a chicken, and like I always was a bit self conscious of that. I struggled with that, but a good actor or someone could really like give over to the process, and then that's where the good theater comes from. And then what's lovely is that these two characters kind of cross over over the course of the movie, where the one kind of sees the light. And then does start to trust the process and become a better actor. And Colman Domingo, who seemed quite solid over the course of the movie, then questions like, what the fuck are we actually doing here? What's the point? Because they get these kind of parole hearings where the one guy gets a chance to go out and he doesn't. And I don't want to give too much more away in that regard, but there's just, it's a lovely study in,
it's a beautiful film,
in mental health and being trapped and hopelessness. And I got the gooeys. Okay. I just thought I'd
It is gooey approved. Yeah,
it's got the gooey sticker. And it's just such a delightful film. And the best part about this movie is that most of the cast
are former inmates.
Oh, okay.
And they bring something, because not only are they just guys who used to be incarcerated, there are guys that used to be incarcerated in that could act
to some degree. Project,
So they're not unfamiliar with the idea of acting. So they weren't complete idiots when it came to shooting these scenes.
Yeah.
But they bring this kind of delivery.
Authenticity.
That you would never have gotten otherwise.
Nice.
Obviously, your main actors are acting.
Yes.
And they got to do the cry scenes, and they got to do they got to make this kind of dramatic movie dramatic.
Yes.
But the other guys that just have to be authentically prisoners do such a fucking great job at doing that, because they are authentic prisoners. Mm. They've got it in their fucking head as to what it was like to stare at the same wall for years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the great message, like you said, of that movie is, I mean, the program is is called the Art Through Rehabilitation Program, I think. Okay. And the whole idea of the movie, and it's not, I was worried when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is going to be a misery porn movie where, you know, everyone's sad all the time and there's a sad outcome and stuff. And it isn't. There are sad moments because these oaks are stuck in a prison and they can't get out. But what this film does so well is that they don't focus too much on the prison life. They focus on how important this space is for them to escape. And Colman Domingo even tells this new guy who's coming in, he's like, don't fuck this up for these people, because this is all they have. This is their way of finally getting out and actually accepting their feelings and also understanding what they did to get here and how they can do better and stuff like that. And it's just a great, beautiful film. And I really hope, I think it'll get lots of awards love. I think Colman Domingo will, it's likelihood it's going to be between, like I said, him, Daniel Craig, and Ray Fiennes the Oscar.
I mean, I'm getting goosebumps like just thinking about his performance, because
even that opening shot of him just like speaking, he's performing Shakespeare. And the cool premise as well is that when they're deciding on their next play, he's like, oh, okay, we're gonna do Shakespeare, we're gonna do this, and then they're all like, why don't we do something more fun, because these guys are just sitting in misery all the time, let's give them something funny and exciting.
That's the thing, is that the new guy he brings in, one of the first things he does to shake it up in a quite innocent way is he goes, hold on, let's make this fun.
Let's make it a comedy.
And so when you guys were talking earlier, I wanted to interject and start talking about Sing Sing. But when you were talking about how everybody was just throwing everything at the wall for Megalopolis.
Yes.
So they have this scene where everyone's like, okay, well, what's the next play going to be about? And the guy was like, let's make it a Western. And the one was like, a horror with Freddy Krueger and Egyptians. And they were laughing. And the guy was like, okay, well, I'm going to write this preposterous play. It's going to have time travel in it. And it's going to be so silly, but it's going to tick all your boxes.
Right.
As far as I know, there's only two proper actors in it. It's Colman Domingo and Paul Ratchie, who, if you recognize him as the counselor from Sound of Metal with Riz Ahmed.
Okay.
And
was he the guy who ran the program?
Yeah, he ran the program. The guy with the long hair.
Because I needed to do a little bit more research, but the guy he brings in is a dude who was very involved in the writing, and he calls himself Divine Eye.
Oh, really?
In real life.
Oh, cool.
So his character is kind of him.
Yeah.
And he was very much involved in the movie.
The outsider, that guy.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal in it.
He's a great fucking actor.
Everyone's the great thing about that movie is it feels authentic, and it just doesn't feel like it panders. Mm. You know what I mean? It's just so like
and something beautiful. I don't know whether you know this, but there's a moment in the movie where all the inmates are doing auditions.
Mm.
And there's this great montage of them auditioning for all these roles.
Right.
That footage was the actual footage of those inmates auditioning for the movie Sing Sing.
That's very cool.
It's very cool. So like even that was actually borderline documentary.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, very cool. So I'd love to keep chatting about Anatomy of a Fall at some point because that's such a beautiful, smart movie. That is just so layered and I was on the edge of my seat.
That was my top five of last year.
That was great. Robot Dreams, we can talk more of at some point. It's almost like a thinking person's Zootopia in the sense that it was like it's all animated and it was nominated. It was one of the films nominated for Best Animated Feature. What won at this year?
It was a Pixar movie. It was
Elemental or something.
No, it wasn't Elemental. It was
okay. Well, you talking about that
this year at the Oscars? Yeah, it would have been The Boy and the Heron.
Boy and the Heron. But Robot Dreams was nominated alongside it. It's all about this dog living in New York
in the '80s. Yeah,
in the '80s. Okay. That is lonely, and you just feel for his loneliness because you can just see him like just wanting to fit in, but he's always. He can't make friends, and he's clumsy, and he's not nearly as cool as everyone else. But he gets this robot. He sort of buys it online, buys it off the TV, and assembles it. And he just has this beautiful friendship with this robot. That they eventually go out to like a Coney Island, and after frolicking in the ocean and lying and falling asleep in the sun, this robot sort of rusts to the point that it can't get up. And so for pretty much the whole winter season, he's trying to get this robot back because it's too heavy for him to move on his own. And then eventually the beach closes. And so for the whole season, he's like trying to,
find a way to get his robot back.
But there are these great moments where it's like you think it's real and then you realize it's a dream. And so it's quite adult in that sense.
It's on Mubi if you have Mubi. It's beautiful. It's a lovely
film. Mubi.
Yeah.
Lovely. Is there anything more that we're dying to talk about right now? Because
I'm going to save mine for Cole because I have a feeling he's seen it.
Okay.
The Substance. Okay. I'm dying to talk about this.
Yes. Now, I also want to talk about that too. And I think that next week we'll do a Tuesday where we'll get back and do another chat because there is just so much to get to.
Yes.
G-Force from your side?
I'll come back to it once it's over, but Arcane Season 2 just started.
Yeah, I started as well.
Oh, I think I think Arcane's the best thing Netflix has ever made.
Okay. Oh, really?
The show is incredible.
The animation's jaw-dropping.
The animation is unbelievable.
What is the back of the box?
Man, it's kind of hard to explain. So it's sort of based on a video game called League of Legends, which doesn't have a plot at all. There's no plot. So they've basically taken characters from this game and invented a whole story for it. And it's mostly the story of these two sisters, Vi and Powder, who becomes Jinx. You'll know her as Jinx in the show. Whose parents are killed by class war essentially going on. So there's the lower rungs of society.
Are we on Earth?
I guess it's entirely fictional. It's like all fictional places. There's magic and crazy technology, and like the upper class and the lower class are very much in conflict with each other. They come from the lower class. Their parents were killed by upper class law enforcement essentially.
What kind of animation?
It's like the 2D 3D kind of blend thing,
but it's almost like hand drawn as well. It's like gorgeous.
So it's all animated 3D, and then the reason it's taken I think like 3 years to do season 2 is because most of the 3D elements are literally hand drawn, so they're taking 3D animation and adding tons of hand-drawn 2D
elements. Somewhere that it's the most expensive animated.
And you can see why.
Yes. Yeah.
I think the cool thing is, because the problem with a lot of animated studios is that the pressure for people to churn out stuff at an impossible rate, you lose the quality. So I'm glad with Arcane they took their time.
Yeah.
They're doing a bong. They're pulling a bong. I think it's like... fucking, I'm going to do this at my own time.
Yeah, I think this is they're finishing it with this season.
Season two is the last one.
Season one is available
on
Netflix, and they're busy working on season two. But why do you love it?
I think it's just, again, it looks incredible, and it's just, it's so well written. Like, for an animated show, where we're so used to seeing animated shows that are like 80% just event, like action, blah, blah, blah. This is like very character-centric.
Is it for adults? It's really good. Is it for kids?
It's more adult-driven.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think,
is it violent?
It gets pretty violent, yeah.
Okay, so it is a more adult show.
Yeah, like teen adults.
Yeah, I'd say like, if I had to give it an age restriction, probably like a 16.
Yeah.
Have you been watching it?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I don't like about the show, especially this new season, is I can't stand the contemporary music in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I hate it.
Okay.
And there's those weird like music video montage things at the beginning.
They do that in the first season as well.
Really?
There's like
I don't remember.
Not necessarily at the beginning, but there were times where they pepper in these like musical.
But other than that, the show is phenomenal, man. It's
Have you started watching season two?
Yeah, they release it in batches of 3 episodes November.
How many episodes are they doing?
9.
Okay.
So the 3 episodes out, I think next week, another 3 the week after the final 3.
No, but it's...
Which is the same way they released the first season.
It's hugely, it's like highly acclaimed. Yeah. It's for good reason. It's like proper well-made. Holy crap.
It's incredibly well-made. Great cast as well.
Yeah. I think good acting. To start wrapping some things up, but I want to put a few things in motion. The one is Heretic.
Heretic.
Yeah. That's coming
up
soon.
I'm very excited.
It looks really good.
It looks really good, and there's a good chance, I saw a mail, that there's going to be some preview screenings, and we're going to be able to give some tickets away.
Amazing. Okay, rad.
Okay, so just putting that out there. What else?
I want to mention one movie.
Okay,
I'm... it's between two. Let me do it, because we mentioned Boy and the Heron.
Yes.
I watched a documentary. It's called Hayao and the Heron.
Okay.
Hayao Miyazaki and the Heron. And it's about Hayao Miyazaki's process.
Okay.
And primarily around Boy and the Heron. So Boy and the Heron is a really hard movie to understand the first time you watch it. I remember Cole was like, when he first watched it. But like, it's one of those movies where it's impossible to understand everything, even on the second or third viewing. Yes. You kind of have to read into people's theories and be like, oh, that actually makes sense, you know? This movie opened my mind up to a whole new dimension of that movie.
Right.
And
so what's the movie called?
Hayao Miyazaki and the Heron. And it's a documentary about the making of The Boy and the Heron.
Where is it?
So I watched it on HBO Max. I don't know where else you could find it.
Okay.
But anyways, it's just such an incredible like experience watching this master in his flipping 80s, still animating. And he's totally in his like old grumpy man era. And I'm loving it. But like, it's such a beautiful film to watch, because you start to see, like I said, a new element of Boy and the Heron that you didn't see before. And this movie shows how, like, who did, he's my favorite Ghibli director. I can't believe
Isao Takahata, I think his name is.
He misses him so much in this movie. There are so many moments where he's like, oh, I'd be talking to him right now.
Is he a director who passed away?
Yeah, so he was the other big dog.
He did Grave of the Fireflies.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
It was those two. And this movie, they often talk about how, like, they were friends, but they were also rivals. And like, there was a love-hate relationship.
I think
where
that's some of the best creative and relationships you can have.
And also, Studio Ghibli's tiny. It's this little building. It's like made up of like 20 people. They source people in, former directors to come and help animate and stuff. And it's such a gorgeous film, because it shows the whole process. I mean, the movie took so long to make. It took like 5 or 6 years. And it's just, it's so beautiful watching this master at work, like where they caught lightning in a bottle, where they're like, okay, let's get this before we lose it forever. You know what I mean? And it's just such a great experience watching this master figure out his demons and understand why he's doing the story this way, because Boy and the Heron is his most personal work far. It's partly biographical, it's, and a lot of the elements in it, like the old mental character, is that other director.
Right.
And like, it just makes so much sense now. And I'm going to rewatch Boy and the Heron with this whole new layer peeled back for me. And I'm so excited. So yeah, it's a great little documentary if you can get hold of it.
Nice.
How do you watch HBO Max?
I've got a VPN.
Okay.
So I've got a package with Hulu where I get Disney and HBO.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, guys. I got one last question for you.
Yes. Cool.
And this is a question for P-Dog, who was at my wedding.
Yes. Banger, might I add. Absolute banger.
Yeah.
When did you figure out that particular dance move? Is my first question.
Which dance? Oh, we were.
Well, so I'm going to describe it to Graham because I'm not sure. You two are friends and you guys knew each other from varsity before Video Store. I don't know whether you've had a chance to see Perrin on the dance floor.
No.
Okay, so my first question to Perrin is when did you find that dance move? Which is like, it's almost like a sort of walking man that he sort of walks, he sort of steps forward and then steps back and sort of uses his arms to sort of do a walk. And then my second question to you, Perrin, is when did you decide, like, that's how you're going to dance for the rest of your life?
So I'm very awkward on the dance floor, and that was the best move I could think.
It was a great move, and it was a very comfortable move.
Yeah.
And you totally, like, it was a very Perrin move.
Yeah.
And I immediately started doing it. And you and me, at one point, even, like, had this, like, almost synchronized little move where we were kind of walking towards each other,
walking back,
and then walking from the other side and walking around each other. I think that was how we said goodbye to
each
other
on
the night. And then I was like, okay, bye. Then you went to sleep.
It literally just came from a place of awkwardness and uncomfortableness. And I was like, this move works. I'll do it.
Okay, so did you make it up on the night?
No, I've always done it like
that's
that.
That's what I thought.
Just your energy helped me do that. Yeah. So, like, that was came up on the spot.
We matched each other's energy.
You know, we just matched each other's chemistry and energy. It was great.
There you go.
Lovely, man. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for giving me that
pleasure,
that lovely dance.
Of course.
And thanks for the catch up.
Yes.
I think it's just so lovely to be doing this again.
Yeah. Mm.
And another thing we must all think about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to you two as well as everyone that's busy browsing the shelves right now, listening to us talk, is to start thinking about what your most rented is.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Okay. So we're going to do one episode, which will be our most rented.
Yeah.
Which is our favorites of the last year.
And oh my God, I'm so excited.
That feeds right into everything that Perrin embodies.
I do an annual list every year, so I'm excited.
That's partly why you got this job, my friend. But I want this year to involve other folks, the you guys out there that are our customers here at the Video Store, to also be giving us your most rented when that comes out.
Cool.
So start giving that a think.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Magic, guys, thank you for your time.
Yes.
Thank you for your lovely chat.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you on Tuesday. We'll see you. We'll do another shift
then.
Yes. Yay.
All right. The home base is thevideostore.co.za. Please chime in.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know what you think about what we've spoken about today. If you've got other films to add to P-Dog's list,
that
could also be good. But we'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.